This week on Making Contact.
Detroit is what the world has to look forward to.
There is no way to address our problems piece by piece. We need to have a change in the system, and we can only win if we struggle together.
This June, thousands of grassroots activists converged on Detroit, Michigan to attend the United States Social Forum. Participants said it wasn't a conference, but a movement-building process toward ecological and economic justice.
Not only is another world possible, another world is inevitable. It's here, it's now, it's us.
Making Contact was at the forum, and on this edition, we'll bring you some of the local and international voices we found there. I'm Pauline Bartoloni, and this is Making Contact, a program connecting people, vital ideas, and important information. There are more than 1,000 workshops during the U.S. Social Forum. The week of dialogue and strategy sessions covered everything from police brutality to climate solutions. 3 nights of plenary speakers focused on the idea of crisis as an opportunity, whether the crisis be in global finance or unemployment in Detroit. Lydia Nekpo, vice president of the Freedom from Debt Coalition, came from the Philippines.
We are often asked about the impacts of this recent global and economic crisis in southern countries. And I'm sorry to disappoint that I will probably not have as many dramatic stories to say as compared to the pictures and images that we saw of the impacts of the crisis here in the United States and in Europe. They were very dramatic to us because these are countries and places where we would least expect these pictures and images. Because for many people in the South, these are places where you strive to go to have a better life. The impacts have not been as dramatic for many reasons. The first being because our economies didn't really rise to the scale or to the heights of the economies of Europe and the United States. When you fall, you don't fall as hard. That's one of the realities. The other is that the impacts are different from country to country depending on how much business you do with the United States and European economies and the economies of Japan and other rich countries. Because for most of our economies, it runs primarily on doing business with your economies here. It's either this is the places where we export goods and products that are assembled in our countries, or these are the places where some of the important things that go into production in our countries have to be imported from. Or for most countries, it's for both. And for our countries, the crisis has not been as dramatic because we've actually, the crisis started way before it hit the United States and Europe. And actually, in fact, instead of just talking about this global and financial economic crisis that started unraveling in 2008, we can actually speak about several crises that has been happening since the 1980s. One of the most important crises is the debt crisis. One of the major issues that our network of movements across Asia, Africa and Latin America and the Caribbean is working on. I am old enough to have lived through the 1980s debt crisis, and that is the context in which our organization in the Philippines, the Freedom from Debt Coalition, was born, and it has been said that we have been existing for more than 20 years. Of course, one of the major goals of our organization is to become unnecessary, so that we don't need to have a debt movement to fight the debt problem. The debt problem is one of the problems that have caused, that was first started in the 1980s and that has continued on till today. So for many economies in the South, the debt is one of the biggest obstacles for providing a better life for our people. It is, in fact, one of the causes of what we actually see today as the phenomenon of a net resource outflow. It means that for many decades, there is much more resources flowing out of our countries than flowing in. Of course, the big economies always like to say they're helping the poor countries, like the Philippines or most of Africa, many countries in Latin America. By the way, we don't like to call our countries poor. We would rather call them impoverished, because we're not actually poor. It's just that we don't enjoy our wealth. Our wealth just leave our countries to rich countries like the United States and Europe. This resource outflow that happens because of the debt problem, because most of our economies have been driven to the point that we borrow so that we pay. The trade relations, foreign investments in our countries to dominate our economies, this resource outflow is a reality which points to the fact that while the wealth is concentrated in the north, which is what we call these countries now, it's a north-south, no longer first world, third world, point to the fact that it is our people and our resources in the south that have actually been paying for the affluence and wealth of the elites in the south, in Europe and in the United States and in Japan. So if we reverse that situation, we would not have the kind of pervasive poverty and marginalization that is true for many, many countries in the south. Just a little bit about the debt problem, because I think what we are seeing as far as the unraveling of the economies in Europe, in the United States, is actually very similar to what has happened to us, which has caused all this outflow of resources from our countries. The debt is a supply-driven problem. It's what they call in economics. It is not true that we were lent this money in order to help us because we did not have wealth in the South. History of the debt problem tells us that it was very important for lenders to lend money in the South because there was not anymore any markets for investment in the 1980s here in the rich industrialized countries. So they took advantage of our difficulties in the South to push loans, whether we needed them or not, whether the loans were actually used for our good or not. And so we, as I said, reached a situation where we were borrowing in order to pay. And so this was a vicious cycle for our economies and continues today. And I guess that is reminiscent of many situation of many families today where credit cards are being pushed, not just here in the United States, even in the Philippines. Credit cards are being pushed so that you end up owing a lot of money. But perhaps that is even in a better situation because at least you make a decision to buy things that you actually need. But in terms of the situation of many countries of the South, the double injustice is that many of these loans were actually not used for the peoples of the South. I would like to invite you for us to have a closer look together about the financial system which has generated these problems for you today and which has generated many problems for us for a long time now. Because there are many common struggles that we can wage to transform this financial system and to transform the economic system, because that is what we have learned. There is no way to address our problems piece by piece. We need to have a change in the system, and we can only win if we struggle together. Thank you.
That was Liddy Nekpo of the Freedom from Debt Coalition of the Philippines. As we just heard in our show, hard economic times are nothing new to those who are used to going without in the Global South. Leopoldo Feco is Policy and Advocacy Director of the Trade Collective, an NGO think tank in South Africa. She was asked to speak about the recent global financial crisis and its impact on women in Africa at the 2010 U.S. Social Forum in Detroit.
We've been here before. We were here before with Enron. We were here before with the dot-com disaster. We were here before when the South Asian Tigers went through their issues a few years ago. Argentina as well. So we've been melting down in different ways. The globe has been melting down in different ways incrementally over the last 20, 30 years or so. What is different about this is that it kicked the belly of the beast in the gut. That is the United States. And the bailout was not only a bailout of the motor industry, it's not only a bailout of US jobs, it's also an ideological bailout. Because one thing that the US government could not deal with was the specter, the sight of American working class people, American workers, standing in solidarity with angry black people halfway across the world, with angry brown people halfway across the world. And we saw this and we recognize this for what it is, which is just a double cross. It's a bailout, but it's a double cross. But it's failed because spaces like this create the alternative, and they bring the alternative to the center and remind us that our struggle hasn't been co-opted and our struggle has not been neutralized, that we're still one in this battle. One of the things as well that's been very difficult about the way many countries, particularly African countries, have had to deal with this bailout is that we don't have the kind of social infrastructure to deal with it. Typically, when we hit rock bottom, there's no safety net. We crack our skulls, we break every bone in our bodies. It's not relative, it's brutal, it's cruel, and it's sudden. And one of the things as well that's very important is that it's not just the kind of sudden breaking bones of now. It's the broken bones that last, the impact lasts for more than a generation, because obviously the symptoms came from a generation ago. It's kind of like having a flu virus in your body and your children sneeze 20 years after you're dead. And that's basically what this crisis has presented us with. I could say more about women and the vulnerability, but these are things that are known, I think. An increase in infant mortality, education, disinvestment in education, in healthcare, in social housing, in social spending. But if I'm forced to throw one statistic out, it will be that there were between 200,000 and 300,000 more infant deaths on average last year. And certainly that the MDG, any of the MDG targets of 2015 have been left by the wayside. Some of us were not at all optimistic that we're going to be able to race to these slightly ridiculous targets, slightly arbitrary targets, but it's even more ridiculous at this particular point in time. Typically, what happens in situations like this is that our past informs our present. And the past crises tell us that there's a gender specificity in the way that we experience these kinds of crises, and that the second round impacts on the crisis of women's choices and on women's work in particular, and no less so than in the African context. But I think that as well, statistics show us that there is hope, but that we need to create this hope for ourselves. We need to take some very direct action and take some very imaginative steps to claim back this hope. Things that we know are that global unemployment figures rose by 30 million workers last year, and they're probably going to rise again this year. Contrary to popular myth, the crisis is not over at all. It's just pausing for a second. It took some vitamin C, but we're still sneezing. It's still difficult. The other thing that we know is that past financial crises show us that it could take 5 to 10 years to turn all of this around, and that we're not going to recover fully for another half a generation. So we have to brace ourselves. The other thing is that the drop in remittances from family members living and working in developed economies hurts sending economies quite significantly. And we've experienced this within the African sector, the African countries, South Asia, and between Latin America and North America. Different impacts on development in my last few minutes as well is that, you know, things like nutrition, things like infant mortality, but I think the things that are very that are most effective are things like what a stimulus package means. What does it mean to both most of us here? Most of us here have never received a bailout in our lives, and we are the most deserving recipients of such. So what are our policy responses? What are our governments saying and doing to make this time easier and more equitable and to create a kind of citizenship and statehood which at least supports us? Things like environmental sustainability have gone out the window at a time like this because it's all about survival. It's all about getting through the day to day. But I think I have to say that one of the things that this presents us with the opportunity to do is that it moves us away from this whole money-mongering, profit-mongering discourse. We're told that this is the survival of the fittest, and it's time to show who is really fit. We've been told that you snooze and you lose. In my language, you say walala wasala. You snooze, you lose, okay? It is dog eat dog. But I think that it's a moment to show that we're not snoozing, we're very much awake.
That was Leopolo Feko of the Trade Collective in South Africa speaking at the United States Social Forum. We'll be right back. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or for CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. Because of listeners like you, this show is distributed for free to radio stations in the US, Canada, and South Africa. To find out how to support us, download shows, or get our podcasts, go to radioproject.org. We now return to Crisis as Opportunity, Voices from the U.S. Social Forum. There's a reason why Detroit, Michigan was chosen as the location for the U.S. Social Forum in 2010. The Midwestern city has been in a slow economic decline for decades. But in many ways, the grassroots movements there show the kind of change that many activists strive for. That's what Invincible, a Detroit-based hip-hop artist, said during the opening plenary.
Detroit is what the world has to look forward to. And when we say that, we can go historically and look at some of the first cars, some of the first highways, first suburbs that grew out of those highways, the industry growing here exponentially, and then, of course, the first place to be hit by the downfall of the industry, by the downfall of expanding and, you know, that disinvesting in our communities, and the white flight that completely disinvested and completely destroyed many of the economic bases here in the city. And along with those firsts, there have been a lot of crises that have created the opportunity for a lot of first solutions, for community, grassroots-led, sustainable and creative solutions, self-reliant solutions by the people for themselves and their communities to transform those crises. And that's what's been happening here in Detroit for decades. So a lot of people in recent years have asked, what's going on with the financial crisis in Detroit? Like it's something new, as opposed to looking at decades upon decades of the failure of capitalism and the failure of industry that is so visible here. And people come here, and my good friend was being shown around the city by a few of us, and she said, this looks like post Hurricane Katrina, New Orleans. And we hear that a lot, and we say, yeah, it was a hurricane in slow motion. And it hit for years. And through that hurricane, people came up with their own community mechanisms to respond to that storm. And those solutions are models that Detroit offers to the world. That's what y'all have to look forward to when you come and you visit. And Detroit is on a more expanded, amplified scale, facing the same issues that are happening in neighborhoods and in smaller communities and other places. And so it's not to say Detroit is unique in our issues here. It's unique in the scale and the level that is happening. And therefore, we've had more of chances and more decades to develop those solutions. And another thing we speak a lot about in Detroit Summer and through Grace Lee Boggs and the Boggs Center, we speak about opportunity and crisis. And for us, like I said, that means an opportunity to come up with those creative solutions. When there's, when the city was wanting to build casinos as a solution to the lack of industry jobs in factories, the Boggs Center, or before the Boggs Center, a group of people, including Grace and Jimmy Boggs, said, no, we don't want casinos. That's gonna hit the poor people first, and it's not gonna create livable jobs. What's the point of that? And the mayor at the time, Coleman Young, called them naysayers. And instead of just resisting casinos, they then decided to create Detroit Summer as a way for youth in Detroit to be able to rebuild our city and transform ourselves in the process. And so I want to just urge all of us to deeply understand, deeply support all those grassroots solutions that you've witnessed on the stage tonight and that you haven't witnessed yet, because there's too many to even begin to name that are taking place in our city and in every single one of your communities. To really support those grassroots, sustainable, creative solutions and seize that opportunity in this crisis and think of what our vision is for not just the 30, but the next 50 and the next 7 generations, as many indigenous folks speak of. We need to think forward. And one last quote that I think is a huge inspiration for every single one of you, whether you consider yourself an artist or not. Creativity is the key to unlock human liberation. And that's what we do here. We are creators. Whether you consider yourself an artist or not, you are all artists and you are all creative problem solvers in your community. And that's what we offer you here from Detroit. And we hope that you can bring your lessons from wherever you are. Peace.
That was Detroit-based hip-hop artist Invincible speaking at the 2010 U.S. Social Forum in Detroit. That last quote was by Detroit-based civil rights activist Grace Lee Boggs.
Music's not a mirror to reflect reality. It's a hammer with which we shape it.
The Black Arts Movement, the League of Revolutionary Black Workers, the Detroit Black Community Food Security Network. These are just a few of the organizations that Detroit-based professor and longtime activist Gloria House spoke of at the U.S. Social Forum. Mama Gloria, as she's often referred to, offered 10 poetic lessons learned from Detroit-based social movements.
1, your priorities for struggle arise out of the deepest aspirations, hopes, and needs of the people with whom you are unified. These deeply felt needs, aspirations provide the powerful energy for revolutionary struggle and have the greatest capacity for generating qualitative change in our social conditions. That's 1. 2, we have to seek and work with those most severely injured by the recklessness of imperialism and the effects of the global economy as we're experiencing them currently. With these brothers and sisters who are suffering most, we will be able to correctly identify what priorities we should designate for our work. 3, respect the culture, religion, spiritual work of those people with whom we are working. Realize that these involvements of spirit, of religion, of culture influence the forms the struggle will take. And we have to stay true to the cultural orientation of the people with whom we are working. In short, stay indigenous, stay local, remain rooted in the culture or cultures with whom of the people with whom we are working. Try to be careful not to impose ideas from formation or formations from other situations and struggles. And then watch closely to see how the cultures in which we are struggling and in which we are working will evolve as we struggle to create change and to respond to the current needs. 4, remain independent and self-determining. If possible, avoid taking funds from corporations and foundations, because you will find yourself trying to live up to the expectations of those funders rather than continuing with your revolutionary impetus, as Brother Malik pointed out earlier. 5, protect and secure the children. Do all the things that are necessary to provide an education for the children. Not the rote education that we are fighting in conventional forms, but an education that will liberate the people, the children's minds, and allow them to create a new future for themselves. Protect the children by standing against police brutality and militarization. Protect the children by creating a secure food network for them so that they can grow to be healthy human beings. 6, build principal alliances and collaborations. Require the powers to fight on many different fronts so that we can weaken them. Build alliances and collaborations so that we require the power to fight on many different fronts at once. 7, allow for human weaknesses such as egotism, but after a while, enough is enough. And say so. Say so. 8, work for balance in your personal life and in your community work. Don't work so hard that you wreck your health. Don't believe that you're so essential to the struggle that you have to do yourself in. Okay? This I only realized at an old age. So I'm passing it on to you. Hopefully you in your 20s and 30s will take this lesson from the old guard. Okay. 9, love and protect and support those who stand with you. And send your love out beyond your immediate circle to the universe. It really works, and it comes back. And 10, finally, trust that no matter how insurmountable a social change task appears to you, there are ways to resist the devastation, the destruction that is sent to our way from the power of corporate transnational global economy. There are ways to resist this and eventually create the new forms that we need. And I'm just going to conclude by saying, though the impact of the global economy has dismantled so many vital aspects of our city's life, let's remember that the wrecked terrain that has been left offers us a field of opportunity for rethinking, recreating, claiming a new quality of life for our city. Of course, this requires our greatest effort of collective work and responsibility, of hope, and of unswerving faith in the people's ability to make a way out of no way.
That was poet, professor, and activist Gloria House at the U.S. Social Forum in Detroit, Michigan. And that's it for this edition of Making Contact. You've been listening to Crisis as Opportunity, Voices from the U.S. Social Forum. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.